I'm Kara Hart reporting agriculture's business from the National Potato Council's Washington Summit. I'm visiting with EPA Agriculture Advisor Rod Snyder. Snyder works directly with EPA Administrator Michael Regan on agricultural issues. Thanks so much for joining us today. And I'm just diving into some of the meat of the issues here since we're limited time today. At this event, you told potato growers that pesticide issues take up the majority of your time. EPA is changing how the agency complies with the Endangered Species Act while approving pesticide ingredients. How is the agency changing up that process?
Well, Kara, thanks for having me. This is a longstanding issue that maybe it's not top of mind for farmers day in and day out, but it has, I think, really big implications for the industry. Over the last 15 plus years, a number of lawsuits have been filed, pointing out the fact that the agency has not been complying with the Endangered Species Act as we review and approve pesticide registrations. The difficult thing about this is that essentially judges have determined that if we're not in compliance with the ESA, these products are not properly labeled or they need to be sent back to the agency for further review. And there is a risk that products actually could be taken off the market if we don't address this for the long term. So last month in January we issued a new policy that for new active ingredients we would be doing these endangered species reviews up front trying to assess the potential impacts and mitigate for those right away as we're creating the label. And we're also going to be working on a longer term work plan to bring existing active ingredients into compliance. This is not only good for species, but in many ways we're hoping it provides predictability and certainty for farmers that these tools won't be lost in future court cases, and that we can preserve these tools into the future, and that the labels are legally defensible. That's an important goal right now of Administrator Regan.
At the end of February, EPA revoked the food tolerances of chlorpyrifos. Then, at least I'm sure as you're aware, 20 agriculture groups were not pleased with that decision and let the agency know. Now a legal battle is anticipated. How does EPA respond to something like this?
Well, I don't have a lot of comment on the pending litigation. It's not appropriate for me to sort of weigh in on that at this time. But the tolerance revocation was first announced in August, just based on some human health data suggesting that the aggregate exposure was above acceptable limits for human health. That suit was brought forward by farm workers and others that had a real interest in this. The tolerance revocation took effect on February 28th. And you're right, now it's being kind of brought forward in litigation, and so we'll just have to see where that ends up. I've been talking to farm groups about this issue, certainly understand where folks are on it, and clearly we'll just have to wait and see where the judge goes with this issue.
Now that chlorpyrifos is banned, EPA directed users and distributors of that product in states like North Dakota, an area that we cover. We cover North Dakota, South Dakota, Minnesota, to dispose of chlorpyrifos through a pesticide dispersal program called Project SafeSend. The North Dakota Agriculture Commissioner said on Tuesday they don't have the resources or funding to accept large quantities of chlorpyrifos for disposal. So what do states do in situations like that?
We're working closely with the state departments of agriculture and the pesticide control officials around the country to address the disposal issues. If farmers have questions or concerns, EPA has a FAQ page on our website that walks through a number of those issues. FDA has also put out a channels of trade guidance just a few weeks ago that talks about potential residues and how that'll be managed. So there's a lot of information online right now, both at FDA and EPA, addressing these issues. Certainly encourage folks to reach out and just know that we are directly talking to ag commissioners around this issue right now.
And what if farmers can't get rid of all the product?
We are definitely going to be working with the states to ensure that that's not the case. We recognize how important this is, and just know that actively talking to Commissioner Goering and others on this issue right now.
Okay. What is the future of FIFRA, especially when it comes to, we think of products like dicamba, more commonly used in that process, things like that?
Well, I would say that the United States has the leading pesticide registration process in the world. Some of the best science, the best scientists that are working on these issues day in and day out. It's a risk benefit statute that takes into account both the risks to human health and species, but also the benefits for food production. And every single time a pesticide is registered, it balances the risks and the benefits to society. And that statute has been in place for many, many, many decades. It's the backbone of how we register and approve approved products here in the United States, and I think it's will be so going forward as well.
Is there anything else you'd like farmers to know in our area of the world about the pesticide approval process, or anything else about the work you've been focused on in the last few months and what could be coming down the pipeline?
Yeah, just to, I think that the agency and Administrator Regan certainly understands that these tools are critically important for food production and for farmers. We want to make sure that we're always balancing environmental concerns with the need for an affordable and abundant food supply. And please, we would encourage farm groups and farmers to reach out to the agency if you have specific questions or concerns. That's part of the reason why I'm here in this role within the Administrator's Office, is to make sure that the ag sector is heard within these discussions. And so that's the role that I'm playing.
Do you feel like agriculture is being heard in these discussions?
I think Administrator Regan is unique in the fact that he has an ag background himself. His grandfather was a farmer. His dad was an extension agent, and he went to an ag school, North Carolina A&T. Not every EPA administrator comes to the job with that type of connection to the ag sector or to food production. And so there's actually, I think, a unique and important moment right now to really be able to elevate these issues and these conversations. Farmers do have a seat at the table. The fact that this position, my position, was filled, and I come to this role with 20 years within the ag sector. I've actually never worked in government. I've always worked directly with farmers. I think that's a testament to the fact that we want to make sure that ag's voices are heard. So never hesitate to reach out.
So speaking of your, in reference to your work you've done in the past with farmers, you do have a background working in the corn industry. And I'm going to shift gears here a little bit. What do you think the future implementation of the renewable fuel standard looks like at the EPA?
Well, we've talked a lot about the RFS in recent months. And in fact, in December, the agency issued a proposed rule around the renewable fuel standard that set renewable volume obligations, RVOs, for 2020, 2021, and 2022. There was also a denial of the small refinery exemptions that had been pending, about 65 of those, which represents sort of a shift in the program in terms of how the agency has been interpreting that under the last administration to now. I think that's a commitment to biofuels going forward, and also understanding where they fit into the broader energy future, the clean energy future for the country. The 2022 RVO is the largest RFS volume obligation that has ever been proposed by the agency, ever. We've talked a lot to farmers and to biofuels groups about the future of this program. We'll also be later this year proposing the SET rule, which basically is the first time since the renewable fuel standard was adopted by Congress that the volume obligations for future years are actually not set in the law. So the agency will be determining those through administrative procedures. So there'll be a proposed rule later this year to address that as well. So this is an important discussion within the agency. We certainly understand the importance of biofuels, both from a clean energy perspective, but also for the rural economy. And the administrator is committed to working with the sector on this.
How does, not allowing small refinery exemptions to happen, and then also not necessarily from an agriculture perspective's point of view, not expanding on the RVO requirement or growing the requirements that are there. How does that balance out? How does that make it a fair discussion moving forward? Does that make sense?
Well, I'll just correct one thing. We are actually growing the program. The 2022 RVO numbers are the largest that have ever been issued by the agency. And we actually have a growth mentality with respect to biofuels. The small refinery exemption issue, not to get into all of the details around that, but basically by those denials essentially meant that those volumes will need to remain in the marketplace, of course. So I don't think those are inconsistent policy decisions from the agency, and certainly we look to continue to grow the program into the future.
As we wrap up here, let's quickly talk about Waters of the United States rule. Where are things at in the rulemaking process?
Well, the agency issued a proposed rule on December 7th, but that's not really the start of the story, as I think everyone knows. The WOTUS issue has been ping-ponging back and forth now for the last 20 years based on federal court decisions, two Supreme Court cases, now three federal rulemakings. And I know that when I've talked to the administrator about this issue, his concern is that we really want to try to find a durable solution and a durable definition that brings predictability for farmers and landowners and for the environment with respect to which waters are jurisdictional by the federal government and which are not. This rulemaking on December 7th was intended to do a bit of a reset. A federal judge last year vacated the Navigable Waters Protection Rule, or what was known as sort of the Trump Rule. That was vacated, and the federal judge basically said that we would need to begin interpreting WOTUS according to the 1980s regulations, a longstanding familiar interpretation of WOTUS. Our rulemaking in December is attempting to sort of get that that steady baseline, that familiar baseline, but also bringing in guidance from those two Supreme Court cases that I mentioned. We've had a number of public hearings. We've had roundtables with the ag sector, and we have 10 regional roundtables coming up in the spring talking about sort of local implementation issues and concerns around the country, and we want to continue to hear from farm groups on this. We know it's critically important to the ag sector, and we want to get it right.
Once again, I'm Kara Hart in Washington, D.C., visiting with Rod Snyder. We're attending the Washington Summit. Our coverage of the event is presented by the National Potato Council, reporting agriculture's business from Washington, D.C. I'm Kara Hart on the Red River Farm Network.